tell us what you want, all right? Yeah, I'm here to help you.
Help yourself, fucker!
Welcome back to Horror Hunks, where we talk about the horror movies we love and the hunks we lust. I am the eviscerated burnt remains of a dreamer bygone, Stuart Forrest.
And I always forget to come up with one of these things, Chris Waltz.
I just came up with mine right on the spot.
I can't do it. I think about how easy it should be, but then I just can't think of anything on the spot. And especially very specifically horror related. Maybe I'll start writing them down or something.
I was just thinking,
and we don't do one every time.
No, I don't think I did one last time because I totally spaced on it.
And I'm the spirit of the dream demon who is inside of you right now. Because that happens in this movie, apparently.
Yes, it does. Which brings us to the movie we're reviewing, A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge, also known as the gayest horror movie in history or the gayest horror movie in the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. I can't remember which one it is, but it's pretty damn gay.
It's pretty damn gay. Some people will say it's unintentionally gay. Some people will say that it was very intentionally gay and just nobody wanted to talk about it at the time. I would say that there's no way that some of the things in this movie weren't intentional, even if they were maybe not meant to be quite as in your face as they came across in post-production. This movie, there's queer overtones. They're not undertones. It's not subtext. This movie is just, for a movie with no openly queer characters, it is a very queer movie.
It's a very queer movie, which I got part of it. We'll get to it. But we start our movie with a little blonde kid, not blonde kid, I mean, he's a teenager, sitting on a bus with a couple of Gabby girls. And the bus is driving in a neighborhood and then starts going off road a little bit in the desert. It goes from a neighborhood in Ohio to the desert, which makes sense in a second.
Yeah, absolutely. I can't count how many times I've been driving through Ohio and it just turns into the Sahara.
I mean, that's how it is here in Indiana. But then it turns out that Freddy Krueger is the bus driver and this is all a dream.
And it's not a Nightmare on Elm Street movie without some kind of horrifying dream sequence to let us know that, bad shit's about to go down for the next 90 minutes. So
yeah, the ground opens up, the girls are screaming. It's a horror movie. And then we are introduced to the blonde guy as he wakes up screaming, because he is our scream king in this movie.
Boy, does he scream.
And he does
scream. Does he scream.
Jesse Walsh. That's his name, right?
Yeah, Jesse Walsh. And as we say in all of these episodes, we take notes over the movies that we're watching. And the first note that I wrote down for Jesse was that scream. My God.
That scream. And okay, so the first hint of this movie's queerness is Jesse gets out of bed and he is wearing some whitey tighties.
And just
sweating
for the record,
profusely.
Drenched in sweat from his nightmares.
But so other people who have reviewed this always point out the whitey tidies. Is that inherently back in the day in the 80s, if you were at the theater watching that, were guys really whoa, it's a guy in his underwear. I feel this is too gay for me.
Are you talking about a man in his underwear or are you talking about them specifically being briefs?
Both.
Because I'm just under the impression that in the 80s, everybody wore briefs, kind of how in the now, everybody wears boxer briefs.
I mean, same. But every time I have seen a podcast and they're reviewing it, they are always pointing it out. They're and then he gets out of bed in his skivvies. I'm like, was it really a big in the 80s? Was it a big deal? Maybe in hindsight, we see it differently because that's not the standard norm for unders.
I think it's a little jarring when I guess briefs, I can't bring myself to call them tidy whities, but I think like briefs are, you know, those bright white briefs are, they stand out more so than other underwear might.
Maybe.
And so I think that it's just kind of jarring when your main character, the first real shot of them after that opening dream sequence, he gets out of bed and he's in these like very white isn't a loud color, but like when you're wearing underwear, I feel like white stands out. And so he gets out of bed and these underwear are just standing out and he's drenched in sweat. And so I think it's just one of those things where everybody was just kind of like, whoa, like, oh, this dude's in his underwear and he's wet. Like, but that's kind of the other thing is I believe, and maybe it's a current thing. I'm young. I can't, you know, speak to it as a teen in the 80s. And I don't think you can either, but, there's something currently, I think that white briefs are almost like a kink. I think like there's subgenres of porn where you could like search white briefs on Pornhub and there's going to be videos that are specifically geared towards people who want to see the actors in their briefs. And so I don't know if white briefs or briefs in general was like a sexual kink, a sexual fantasy in the 80s, but if it was, people watching this movie got what they wanted because we, you know, that first scene of him is just right there in his underwear.
See, I feel like it was just like back then, just like, oh, that's a high schooler in his underwear. But now yeah. It's not.
Yeah, and like I always feel so weird because, again, as always, the actors are not high schoolers. It's the character that's a high schooler. Jesse Walsh, the guy who played him, who, of course, what's his name?
You haven't pulled up. Mark Patton.
Mark Patton, like, was in his 20s when he made this movie. But he's, you know, he's playing a teenager and he plays a teenager who is supposed to be kind of geeky, I think. But we don't. It's always very unclear to me in this movie what his kind of role is because he's the main character, but he's kind of a geek, but he's friends with the jock he's going after the hot girl. And so like, he's kind of just an amalgamation of all of these kind of different genres of character that we would see in a horror movie. If we're watching a Friday the 13th, we have all of those people as individual characters. You have the geek, you have the jock, you have like the new kid in school, like he is. But in this movie, there's not that many characters. And so they kind of are pushing a lot of them into one. They never say, oh, Jesse is bullied. Jesse is a nerd. Nobody likes him. But you just kind of get that vibe from him throughout the movie.
Maybe it's also like an 80s thing. Like you saw it when in the 80s, how you perceived him as how he was supposed to be.
Maybe. And maybe it's one of those things where, you know, it's always nice to be able to see ourselves in a character. And so maybe they mishmashed, you know, several different archetypes of a character into this one person. And again, it's a small cast. We have two hunks for this. Well, I guess kind of three hunks for this episode. And it's just because there's not that many people in the movie. Because really, we have Jesse. We have Grady, who is the other kind of like main hunk. We've got Lisa, who is the girlfriend. And we have Coach Snyder. And outside of like very secondary characters like the parents and the teens who show up at the party, those are really the only four actual characters we have in the movie.
It's a small cast.
It is a small cast, which makes it kind of nice. I feel like a lot of people shit on this movie as one of the, if not the worst Nightmare on Elm Street movie. And I think it's in the top half. I mean, there's a lot of Nightmare on Elm Street movies to choose from, and it's definitely not, you know, top three or anything like that. But I don't think it's bad. You get to things like Part 5, Part 6, Freddy vs. Jason. Those are bad movies. But Part 2, I feel like, is actually a pretty solid sequel. They tie it into the original pretty well for a movie that doesn't have the main actress. Heather Langenkamp didn't come back for Part 2, but they still tie it back to her character. Jesse is recently living in her old house. he and Lisa find her old diary. And so I feel like they do a good job of tying it back to the original movie that takes place, what, 5 years before this?
Yeah.
Without, you know, because how many Friday the 13th movies are there where they don't even really reference the movies before it? It's just, oh, you have another group of people who are getting attacked by Jason, but there's no real connection. So I think in this movie, they do a good job of at least tying it to the movie before it, even if Heather Langenkamp didn't come back and there isn't that main character returning.
Truth.
How do you feel about Jesse kind of as a character and as a hunk? Because he's in my opinion, and we have different opinions on this a lot, he's not a hunk. He's not hunky in any way.
Okay. Because so throughout the movie, like he starts getting possessed by Freddy, which is the whole like theme of his character arc in the movie. I feel like he gets hotter the more he gets possessed.
He sort of starts to get that like rugged, haggard, crazed look that I feel like both of us, but mostly you, would be into.
Yes.
And because he's kind of like clean cut. I almost said mama's boy, but like he doesn't really interact with his parents a ton and it's never really positive. But you just kind of have that like good boy who gets up and goes to school every day and does what he's supposed to and doesn't really get in trouble vibe from him. And then as the movie progresses, you know, as he's getting possessed by Freddy Krueger, he starts to turn into more of this bad boy character. And, you know, even to the point where his parents are accusing him of, they're accusing him of doing drugs. They're accusing him of setting the family parakeet on fire, like all these different
exploding
things.
Exploding the family.
Yeah, blowing it up with a cherry bomb or something. But I feel like he just doesn't scream horror hunk to me. But at the same time, yes, he kind of does. And they're definitely trying to make him come across that way, because again, the first scene, he's almost naked and drenched in sweat.
Yeah. Which then leads, I cannot remember the entire thing of the storyline, but he goes to school, he meets people, and he's on the baseball team.
He's either on the baseball team or they're just playing baseball in PE. I don't really know exactly what's going on, but essentially that's where we're introduced to Grady.
Yeah. He has a very homoerotic wrestling fight with Grady, who's picking on him for some reason.
Yeah, they have a disagreement on the baseball field, the baseball diamond. Oh man, sports. They have a disagreement playing baseball, and it leads to them actually like physically wrestling each other. And within the first 10 minutes of this movie, we have bare ass because
Grady pulls down the back of Jesse's shorts, and
yeah, which.
Wearing a jock strap, which, I mean, gay.
That's another thing I don't quite understand. I played like little league baseball. I didn't play high school sports or college sports. Is that like, do you just wear a gym or do you just wear a jock strap to gym class?
That's why I think they're on the baseball team, because like I was friends with baseball players in high school and they wore jock straps.
Like all day?
No, like just to like baseball practice and games.
It's so funny to me too. And we're talking about this kind of like intentional or unintentional queerness of the movie. And that's one of those things, that fight could have been completely heterosexual until you have him getting his pants pulled down and you're showing bare butt, right?
Yeah.
So again, it makes me feel like maybe it was subconsciously intentional, but some of the choices made in this movie, especially when it comes to kind of that relationship between Jesse and Grady, feels just very
romantic.
Not even bromantic. I've had full-on bromances where nobody's pulled my pants down. I feel like it's like full-on closeted romantic.
See, now that would make a good Friday the 13th.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Either one, really. They're basically either the same one. Thing. Because
well, I'm looking up the director, because isn't the director gay?
I don't know for sure. I would love to hear what you think on that or find out on that. Because I watched the there's a documentary about this movie called Scream Queen, and there's a lot of disagreement between different people, including the actors and the directors and the writers, of how gay this movie was meant to be. And I feel like he was advised, Mark Patton was advised to be closeted in order to get more roles, because in the 80s, an openly gay man is not going to be getting cast as a heartthrob, as a straight, you know, straight heartthrob. You didn't have movies in the 80s where the hero of the movie was openly gay, whether it be the character himself or the actor. The actor is not going to get cast, and the movie's not going to get written with a gay hero character. But in the in this documentary, there's a lot of discussion, there's a lot of disagreement, there's a lot of separate interviews where different stories are being told about the level of intentionality with the gayness. And it seems like Mark Patton felt like it was very intentional, and it seems like the writers, director, producers all said, oh, no, we did not mean for this to happen. And so it feels like that, like, production side said, no, this was not meant to be a gay movie. But then Mark Patton is saying, no, it absolutely was meant to be a gay movie, and I played it that way.
But then again, maybe, like, perspective-wise, it was the 80s. You didn't have, like, a lot of gay movies. You didn't have a lot of gay anything. So maybe it was intentionally, secretly, like, done to be a little bit gay, like a queer movie, but no one was picking it up except for the gay actor.
Well, and here's the thing. Director has final say on all performances.
Yeah.
So, you know, we will watch, let's say we watch the shittiest movie on the planet and we say, oh man, those actors did a terrible job. The directors told them how to act that movie, and they chose the takes they used.
Yeah.
So I feel like even if this movie, let's say Mark Patton was playing it as a gay character, if the director didn't want that to come across, then they would have said something about, hey, we need to retake this and you need to act more straight. Yeah. As awful as that is, you know, they would have said that. So I choose to believe that, whether anybody wants to admit it or not, that I think there is some intentionality behind it. Because totally. Even in the 80s, nobody was that dumb. Nobody would make this movie and not realize, oh man, this is super gay.
I guess the other big, like, plot point that, like, moves them forward is this one. So Jesse finds Nancy from the first movie's diary.
Yes.
With his new girl
friend.
What is her name?
Lisa.
Okay.
And then, so what we have here, they find the diary and Jesse starts having these dreams. And I think the first main dream we get is that Jesse discovers or follows the coach to a leather bar. And again, there's a lot of bars, and for them to have specifically chosen a very queer looking,
oh, it's totally a gay bar.
And it doesn't, they don't say that, but everybody there is like got the whole, like, dressed in leather daddy bot vibe. The women who are there have a very, like, butch lesbian vibe to them, especially, like, very gay stereotype, because we all know that queer people come in every shape and form. But, like, they walk into this bar in this scene, and it's just, like, very obviously meant to be a gay bar, or is designed to parody a gay bar in some way. It's not like any straight bar I've ever been in, I'll tell you that.
Like, walking in there, I would immediately, like, seeing it, I immediately think, oh, gay bar.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think anybody watching this at any time would.
He goes in and he managed to get into this bar and order a drink before the coach catches him.
And it's so funny because the coach catches him in full, like, leather daddy get up.
Yep.
And, like, leather is not, like, my thing. I'm not throwing on chaps and going to the bar every weekend. But if I were, I don't think I would confront a high school student. I would just like try to hide from them.
Well, there's some undertones there that are, there's some problematic undertones there.
Yeah. And it's Coach Snyder.
Is a creep.
Queer, not queer. He comes across as a very creepy person because he catches Jesse at this bar. And instead of just being like, I'm taking you home or you need to go home, he takes him to the high school and makes him run laps in the gym in the middle of the night.
And then makes him shower.
And then has him go shower afterwards. And that may not be any kind of commentary on anything, but it's just a really weird thing for this character to do. And at this point, we don't know if it's real or a dream because weird stuff starts happening in this shower scene. And essentially, the coach is bound and tied up in the showers and stripped of all of his clothes.
Second bare ass in the movie.
Second bare ass. And then he is whipped with jump ropes and assaulted by balls of different varieties.
Yep.
He has footballs, basketballs, soccer balls, volleyballs. They're all just flying at him and attacking him. And, you know, at this point, something either supernatural is going on or Jesse's having a dream or both. And we have this. One of the things I'll say about this movie is that the practical effects are really fun. And I think a lot of times, especially in the 70s and 80s, practical effects are very hit and miss. I am somebody who I don't always love them. I know a lot of people who hate movies if the effects are digital or CGI, and I don't really mind it if they're done well. But these practical effects in this movie are very good. And we have Freddy slash Jesse just rips into the coach's back with his claw fingers and like shreds this man's back and kills him. And the police end up finding Jesse just wandering around the streets in the rain and take him home.
Well, and right after the coach is killed is where we get our second like good scream. Because Jesse, like, snaps out of it. And he, like, holds up his hand he's wearing Freddy's claw and screams.
Yeah, and he lets out this shriek in the showers with this, like, bloody claw hand. And that's another thing that I really like about this movie is that it's a sequel to what became an iconic horror movie. A Nightmare on Elm Street was not meant to be a very huge movie, right? It was kind of just something to keep this production company afloat. And then it turned into this iconic horror movie. And so for the sequel to just kind of do something fresh, where in the first movie, Freddy is killing people in their dreams. And in the second movie, Freddy is using a sleeping character to kill people in real life. And I think that that's just like a really cool change that we had from the first movie to the second movie to show you that like, hey, this is, you know, this is a horror sequel. This could be a franchise, but we're going to do something different this time. And I like that about it.
I thought it was a good like way of like switching it up from the first movie to the second movie.
Yeah. And yeah, it's definitely a switch up. It's definitely a change. After this slice and dice moment, we have Jesse is found wandering the streets in the rain at night, and the police bring him home, and it's not really clear what's going on to us. We don't know if he was sleepwalking, if it was a dream. We know we're watching a Nightmare on Elm Street movie. We know that the coach is probably really dead, but we don't know what happened because, again, if you're watching this movie in the 80s, Freddy doesn't kill people in real life. He goes into their dreams while they're sleeping, so we don't know what happened. But it turns out that the coach is dead, and we are starting to believe, you know, Jesse is responsible and Freddy is taking over his body.
But I was also going to interject. So Jesse gets to school the next day and everyone's gathered outside the school because the coach has been killed. And that's where he finds out that the coach actually died. And I guess where we find out also, and he's meeting up with Grady, but there is a random extra who I count as one of our horror hunks. Because he is just absolutely stunning. And he's only there for like four frames.
Who is this man?
I would have to go and screenshot it. Because there's no like images online of this guy. Just some random extra who, like, when I watched it, I was just like, oh, hello.
Hello, and, random extra.
Yeah, and I'm just like, he was very nice to look at.
Yeah, I must have missed him completely. I know when I watch these types of movies, I often miss things in the background, but I'll have to go back and check that out because we don't want to miss a potential hunk. So we find out that day that also, I forget why, but Grady, I think he got in a fight with his dad and ended up getting grounded, which kind of is a random fact for the movie, but it sets up kind of how the rest of the movie plays out because Lisa is having a pool party at her house that night. And so this is where, again, a little more queerness comes into this movie because Jesse and Lisa are bonding throughout the movie. I don't think they have any chemistry whatsoever as a couple. I think they make really cool friends because they went and they investigated the factory where Kruger used to work and they didn't really find anything there, but they had this little adventure together. And it's so funny to me because Jesse's chemistry with Grady is a lot better than it is with Lisa. Mm-hmm. And again, intentional, not intentional, it is what it is. But Jesse goes to this pool party, but Grady's not allowed to go. And there's a sequence in this pool party, which I love pool party scenes. I don't know why. I don't swim. I have a fear of drowning. But I think pool party scenes, especially in the 80s, are really fun. And so you have all these like teens like dancing and having a good time as soon as the parents go to sleep. And Jesse and Lisa take things to her little cabana, like pool house.
Because her parents are apparently filthy rich.
Yeah, you know, you live in Springwood and you got that money. She has the in-ground pool too, you know, in the 80s, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
But they take things to this pool house and they're making out. And I think she's like, she starts to take her top off and he's, you know, like groping her up a little bit. But he's just so uncomfortable. And in the movie, he's uncomfortable because he thinks he just killed his teacher and he doesn't know what's happening. And
well, I think by now he's already suspecting that he, like, Freddie is, like, working through him.
Yeah, because he has that conversation with Lisa at the pool party where he's kind of, like, freaking out. He's bugging out about things. And he tells her, there's somebody inside of me, and he's trying to get out.
Yeah.
And it's also, like, just it's just a gay line, right? There's a man inside of me, and he's trying to get out. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's like gayness to it. And then there's like, what, do you want him out? Do you want him in you? Like, you know, Jesse has his freak out. And I think there's a moment where they're like making out and she's like, what's wrong? Are you okay? And he kind of he's having these flashes where like Freddy's tongue comes out of his mouth and like, he's trying to hide it from her. But then he's like, I have to go to Grady's. And it's so funny to me because like, again, it's very weird to me that they're like in the middle of this makeout session and they're getting hot and heavy. And he's like, I have to go to my guy friend's house now. Like, he doesn't
have to go
finish.
To my hot guy friend's house right now.
Yeah. We haven't really talked about Grady and his looks in this movie. Grady is USDA prime sirloin. Like he's got it going on.
Oh yeah. Grady is really hot. I'm scrubbing through the movie right now. And we totally forgot to mention another maybe awkward underwear shot. Where it's right after he finds out that the coach is dead, and it like, but the shot itself is really awkward because it's morning, he just got to school, and it immediately cuts to Jesse laying in bed completely covered in sweat, and then he like gets up out of bed and like, but drops his like blankets and he's just like standing in his briefs again and finds Freddie's like claw on his thing,
and yeah, like, he hides it in the dresser drawer, right?
Yeah. And it's just like a very obvious like crotch shot because it like pans down and holds on just like guy in underwear crotch.
Well, and we also have the scene where his parents, it's earlier in the movie, but his parents are making him clean his room. And he has that like dancing scene where he's kind of like holding, I don't remember what it is exactly. It's not like a croquet mallet. What is he holding? He's holding like I'm looking at a picture of it and I still don't know what it is. He's holding a long cylindrical object on his crotch, like air humping as he dances. And it's just sort of like, one, what straight teenage boy is doing that alone in his room?
I mean, in the 80s, probably none. But yeah. Like, by today's standards, probably a lot.
Oh, yeah, he'd be making TikToks as he did.
He'd be making TikToks.
Today. Yeah. But yeah, we have like all of these queer-coded scenes. Jesse leaves the pool party, and he goes to Grady's house because Grady's grounded. And Grady's in bed. And I think Jesse, because Grady's grounded, Jesse sneaks in through the window. So it's like a very Romeo and Juliet type moment. But Jesse, interestingly, confides in Grady something that he didn't confide in Lisa. And he tells him, I think that like the ghost of Freddy Krueger has gotten inside of me and is making me do things. It's making me hurt people.
He's also like super intense and like hotter.
Yeah, yeah, like you were saying, as
I think maybe the actor kind of like maybe gained a little bit of weight during production just because he looks a little like his face looks a little more fuller. There's something much more hot about him during that scene than like earlier scenes in the movie. Or maybe it was the other way, maybe he like lost weight during it and was looking a little emaciated and it was in earlier scenes. I don't know. But he's like super intense and it's kind of awkward just because if I had someone like Grady is a beautiful idiot. He's like played, you know, supposed to be like dumb, good looking jock. But even like someone dumb would be like, this is intense and weird and I'm creeped out by it.
Yeah. He's like, yeah, you can stay here tonight. I'll lay here in bed in my red silk shorts.
Yep.
And I'll stay awake while you sleep is essentially what Jesse asked him to do. Jesse needs to sleep. I think he's pretty exhausted at this point in the movie because he's not sleeping, even though it's only been like a day, but been there. And so Grady says, I'll stay awake while you sleep and I'll make sure that you don't like sleepwalk and start murdering people, basically. And in true horror movie fashion, immediately Grady goes to sleep. There's no hesitation. And I'm assuming it's because he doesn't believe Jesse. But then we have this sort of cool scene where Jesse wakes up and essentially he's like kind of writhing and he's in pain and Freddy Krueger starts to hatch out of him. And again, it's those practical effects because Krueger literally just like rips out of his chest and is growing out of Jesse's body. And I definitely believe in reading too much into things, but there's this whole idea of with queer people specifically, like sort of living two lives, being two different people. And so we get that kind of visually represented in this movie with Jesse's other persona hatching out of him, right? Yeah.
We also get that cool shot of his hand with, like, Freddy Krueger's claws coming out of his fingers.
Oh, yeah, the claws coming out of the fingers. It makes my fingers hurt every time I watch it.
Well, like, all of his skin, like, starts peeling off. It's gross and cool.
When we have that shot where he opens his mouth as well, probably to scream, because he does that a lot in this movie. But he opens his mouth, and we have, like, Freddy's eyeball in his throat.
Oh, no, Grady is wearing green silk shorts.
I'm like, colorblind. What do you want from me? Well, green, red, it's the same thing.
He's all sweaty, too, so.
Of course he is. It must be summertime in Springfield.
I don't know.
It's summertime.
That olive skin and oof.
It's summertime in Ohio. So Freddy literally just erupts from Jesse's body. I feel like every word I'm choosing is also very gay, but Jesse is now Freddy. And we have this kind of like sad moment where Grady realizes that this is happening and he's terrified and his bedroom door is locked and he's like beating on the door and begging for his parents to come help him and his parents can't get in. And it's like, kind of, this movie does not have many emotional beats in it whatsoever, but we have this shot of like this terrified, beautiful man trying to beat his bedroom door down and his parents can't get the door open. And then from his parents' perspective, these claws just rip through the door and like blood pours down. And we know that poor Grady has been stabbed to death by Jesse slash Freddy.
R.I.P. our I think poor sweet Grady.
Yeah, rest in peace, our hunky dumb jock of a man. And that's one of the other things with this movie is none of the characters really feel like they get that much screen time, even though there's not many of them. So, like, I don't feel like we got a ton of Grady in this movie, but we love him when he's in the movie.
I feel like this was, like, very almost introspective for Jesse. Because most of the movie is him, like, being like, oh, my God, something's wrong with me, but very silently.
Well, and, like, hello, growing up queer, didn't we all think that?
Okay, growing up queer.
Yeah, and again, I 100% maybe I'm just making connections to my own life, but like that's what we're supposed to do when we watch movies. We connect with the characters, we connect with the story in whatever way we can. And for this movie, it's very easy to say, like, oh, that's kind of how I feel. Not murdering people, but like being different. Something's wrong with me. Mm-hmm. How do I fix this? And I can only imagine, I mean, I grew up in the 90s and felt that way in the 90s and early 2000s. Can imagine it would be 10 times worse in the 80s, I feel like.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it was the height of the AIDS epidemic.
Exactly.
And tip of the spear for anti-gay preachers and pastors.
Yeah, heavy stuff.
Queer in the 80s, it sucks.
So after we lose poor sweet Grady, Jesse and Freddie return to the party. And
covered in blood. He's covered in blood.
Covered in blood. And that's when he has the moment where
and Lisa's just Lisa, like, oh my gosh, what happened to you?
Like, yeah, she's like, what's wrong?
That's the reaction. She has a reaction that I would be like, if I saw somebody with like a finger cast on, be like, oh my God, what happened to you? And that's exactly how she acts. But he is covered in blood. And she just saw him too. They were just making out in the cabana and he is just drenched in blood.
Yeah, he's like, I got to go to Grady's. And then he comes back like a half hour later and he's just like drenched in blood. And she has the like, oh, are you okay? When I would be like, you need to get the fuck out of my pool house.
Like, what were you and Grady doing?
Oh, my God. But that's where we have the scene where he's explaining to her, like, oh, my God, there's somebody inside of me and I have to get him out. Or he's telling her that something's off. And, like, Freddie reveals himself to her as well. And there's kind of this moment where I think she kind of, like, wrestles with Jesse and, like, throws him behind the couch. And then he immediately pops up as Freddy. And, like, super simple but also effective where he, like, falls down as one person and gets up as another. And so Lisa is, you know, getting chased by Freddy and he bites her ankle, which for some reason really grosses me out. and he jumps through the glass doors and everybody at the party is like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah.
But he disappears. And I see a lot of people talk shit about this scene, but like Freddie reappears from behind, I think like the grill or something, and just starts like massacring these partygoers. And it's so camp. It's so silly. It's so like poorly done in a lot of ways.
Right before he starts massacring him, you have that one guy who like I'm going to call the future youth leader who's like, hey, like this burnt crispy man yeah. is standing in front of you and he's like, hey man, like are you okay, like we can help you.
And then Freddie just like slashes him and it's like the first kill of that moment. But you have this whole moment where he's like killing all of these partygoers in like varying ways. Like some of them he like makes the pool catch on fire
the pool was boiling and people are in there.
Yeah, and, like, I know some of them are trying to, like, climb the fence, and the fence gets real hot, and, like, they fall down, and, like, flames just erupt from – there's a lot of fire in this scene.
Yeah.
But it's just kind of silly and fun, and I still, to this day, don't know if all of that was really happening, because if it was really happening – later at the end of the movie, we don't really have any sense that, like, all of this bad stuff happened that night. But, and also, like, I think you and I had talked about this at one point where like, Lisa's parents are fucked. Like,
yeah, I mean, they got a bunch of dead teenagers on their property that they weren't supervising.
Yeah. It's just one of those silly things where I would love to do some kind of, like, retrospective on what happens after the horror movie. And so you have, like, whatever the horror movie is, let's say, like, you have all these people getting murdered and the supernatural bad guy gets, like, vanquished. But then, like, the final girl or the sole survivor, like, definitely looks like a psychopath.
Like, yeah, like, what happened afterward? So, like, yeah. It, like, in this one, after this whole, like, party massacre, he drives out to the plant that Freddy originally died in or worked at. I can't remember.
Yeah. Both.
Both. And Lisa follows him. And then we get these random, like, baby demon dogs that are
with masks on their faces.
With masks on it. Complete. Like, I think that's the most random part of this entire movie is those, like, baby demon dogs. And then they fight. She, like, I don't remember how she even does it, but, like,
she saves him with the power of love. I hate the end of this movie. For a movie that I was earlier was saying is not that bad, the ending is terrible because, one, Lisa was not the main character of this movie the entire time. And then they magically just kind of turn her into the final girl.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the issue that they ran into was that, like, our final boy, our main character, is now the bad guy.
Yeah.
And so we have to have somebody save the day. So, like, let's just make it his girlfriend, who hasn't really been that important up until this point. I don't like that about this movie at all because not, like, female empowerment, I love a strong woman, but, like, that's just not Lisa until now. And it feels like, to me, like they just had to have somebody save the day. So they made her suddenly this, like, strong protagonist who's going to tell Jesse how much she loves him. And she's going to give him a kiss, and then everything's okay.
And does Freddy catch on fire?
Yeah, because when Jesse is saved, he kind of, like,
births out of him.
Freddy's ashes. Yeah. Freddy is burned up and dead, and then Jesse kind of, like, emerges from the ashes and is alive still. Yeah. Which is, like, that's cool and all, but it just doesn't work with everything that had been set up. They should have just made Lisa the main character and Jesse was her boyfriend.
Yeah.
And this stuff happens to her boyfriend and she has to save him. But instead, we just sort of got this, like, retroactive main character added to the story who wasn't that before.
Yeah. And then they go to school, they get on the bus and are, like, talking to her friends and are like, crazy pool party. And then
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of also devolves into, I can't remember if it's outright saying that it's a dream or, like, inferring that it's a dream?
Well, it's 100% saying it's a dream because 2 seconds later, the bus starts to speed up and everybody's kind of getting really scared. And Lisa's friend, who doesn't even have a name, Freddy's claw shoots out of her chest.
Okay, yeah.
So, it's sort of like that it's not over, like, ending. That's another thing, though, is we don't find out what happens to these characters.
We never do in horror movies. That's so rare for us to ever find out what happens to them.
But I feel like in a series like A Nightmare on Elm Street, you have the first movie with Nancy. This movie heavily references Nancy. It takes place in the same house. They read her journal. In the third movie, Nancy comes back and is a counselor for these teens who are locked in a psych ward because of the dreams, but there's never any mention of Jesse or Lisa and what happens. This movie is kind of the black sheep of the franchise, which is hilarious to me because so many of them are not good movies, but, like, these characters are never mentioned again in the series as far as I know.
I mean, after all of that, no, he's got trauma and he's gay. I mean, gay and traumatic.
Maybe he found a man and they ran off together and now they live in, like, Malibu or something. I don't know.
Maybe.
So let's discuss these hunks a little bit. We've got Jesse, the everyman, maybe gay, closeted heartthrob of the movie. We've got Grady, the athletic, dumb beefcake. And we've got Coach Schneider, the creepy, sadistic Leather Daddy.
Is how do he you rank one of our hunks?
If he's not one of the hunks, there's only two. So we're just, you know what? He's toned, he's middle aged, and that's okay. How do you rank these men? What numbers do you give them?
Well, I'm gonna give Grady 10 out of 10 beefcakes.
Okay.
I'm gonna give Jesse 4 out of 5 whitey tidies. And I'm gonna give Coach Snyder 0 out of 100 leather whips because he's a fucking creep.
Perfect. I'm just gonna agree with you because I don't have the mental ability to come up with my own ranking system like that, but I would rank them in the same order. I think that Grady is obviously the all-star hunk of this movie. I think that Jesse, you know, he's a solid contender, but he's just kind of too like every man, right? He's kind of just too normal. And then Coach Snyder's a fucking creep, and yeah. I could go the rest of my life without ever seeing that man on my screen. But
what does it say about me that I find Jesse especially attractive when he's acting super psychotic?
It says what we've known about you since I met you is that you have a very intriguing taste in men.
I'm gay and traumatized.
Yeah.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Horror Hunks. Your hosts were me, Stuart Forrest, and Chris Waltz. Join us again in 2 weeks when we discuss the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake from 2003. Horror Hunks is a Dead Oaks production with music produced by Ben Bryles. Find us on Twitter at Horror Hunks and Instagram at Horror Hunks Pod. And until next time, stay horny, don't die.
What you just described is like, I douched tonight underwear. Like, you are having sex. You're not wearing those to the office. Like,
definitely, because I know from experience, getting laid tonight underwear. So,
yeah, exactly.